Alliances have always been important for all of history. I mean, when nations go to war, they generally like to pair up with allies that will help them. And in peacetime, it's always good to have more than one country on your side. And so they've always been very, very important. They're incredibly important in World War II, which is what I write mostly about. Without the alliances that the West created, chances of our winning the war would have been very, very slim with the Soviet Union, but also with Britain and the rest of the Allied countries. There were like 30 Allied countries that were involved in the Western Alliance against the Germans and the Japanese. So it's extraordinarily important. And I think the problem with today is that we've gotten so far away from World War II. We just commemorated the 80th anniversary of the beginning of World War II, which was the German invasion of Poland on September 1st, 1939. And that's ancient history to most people. 80 years is a long time to most people. Most people certainly weren't around during World War II. And so they don't really think, many people don't think that it really applies to them or what happened afterwards. But I think it does. I think it's important that those alliances that helped win the war and certainly helped keep the peace after World War II, it's important to keep them going, because without them, I don't think we would have had this long period of peace and prosperity that most of the world did have, or much of the world did have after World War II. We certainly did. The United States certainly did. Britain did. The rest of Western Europe did. And that wasn't just happenstance. It was because a lot of people worked very, very hard to work together to make sure it did happen. And I think we're losing sight of the fact that we need to keep doing that.
So you're looking at the concept of distance and time. What are some of the other factors that are eroding these long-time alliances that we've come to expect to be there in times of trouble or challenge?
Well, I think it also goes to what we're just talking about, distance and time. We've seen the rise in Europe and other parts of the world and the United States, the rise of right-wing extremist populist groups and leaders who are more intent on keeping their countries separate, keeping their countries homogeneous, being against immigration. And so the emphasis on in these groups and among these people are keeping people out, not allowing people in, not cooperating, lack of cooperation, a specialness of our group. We are the most important group. We are the most important country. We don't have to work together, whether it's America first, Britain first, whatever. It's the sense of standing alone against the rest of the world. And I think that's very dangerous.
It is a danger in your mind. What are those dangers?
There's so many dangers on so many levels. Economically, I think, just as an example, the controversy in Britain over Brexit, over whether Britain should leave the European Union, and the possibility that Britain may leave the European Union without a deal with the European Union, which would mean Britain giving up all the advantages of being part of an alliance, economic alliance, social alliance, that has really become part of the British fabric. You know, there are hundreds of thousands of people that are there. Britons and Europeans can travel back and forth freely. They are benefiting from free trade. They're benefiting from all sorts of things that are possible because there is such a close partnership between Britain and the rest of the countries of the EU. And there's no question there are problems with the EU. I agree about that. But I don't think the residents of Great Britain understand how difficult it is going to be to separate themselves totally from Europe in the way they may very well do by the end of October, just in terms of, in so many terms, travel, food, medicine. I mean, I think there could be real chaos in Britain. So it's not just a sense of pending danger. It's a real possibility of chaos within a country if they opt out of that.
Populist leaders, isolationists, does that create a vacuum for adversaries to move in?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's how Hitler was able to get as far as he did, because of these populist movements, not only the populist movements, but also the reluctance of people and countries to stop him. Yes, it does create a vacuum, and it creates a vacuum today for countries that don't share the same ideals or the same traditions or the same commitment to democracy that we do and that other countries do. And they are taking advantage of it. Putin in Russia is obviously the most prominent, but it creates the possibility of really, really severe difficulties.
You're in Washington, D.C. How do you view the U.S. foreign policy?
Well, I'm a historian, political expert, to put it mildly, or current affairs expert, to put it mildly. I think foreign policy right now is somewhat chaotic in the U.S. I mean, I think it's very hard for our allies to understand exactly who we are and where we are and what we're doing. Because of the current administration, we have pulled back from many of our traditional foreign policy goals. It seems like a whipsaw effect in Washington. One day, the administration will say something, and then the next day, they will go completely against that. So it's very hard. It's not only very hard for our allies, it's very hard, I think, for Americans to keep up on what exactly is going on. And so I think there's a great sense of bewilderment and concern on the part of other countries and on the part of Americans as well.
Knowing your history, where do you see the world heading right now?
I don't think it's a very favorable picture right now. I'm an optimist by nature, and I'm hoping that this will change. But right now, we see governments of countries like the U.S. and the U.K. who seem to have lost their way in terms of holding close to traditional values of our countries, of a democracy. But I am an optimist, and one thing that I also believe is that people can change that, that people can stand up for what they believe, ordinary people. The last book I wrote was a little different than the other books I've written. It was about the French Resistance. It was about a woman who headed one of the largest and most, the largest and most influential Allied spy network in occupied France during the war. And the book is about her network, which is about more than 3,000 agents. And these agents weren't trained spies. These were ordinary people. These were, you know, like bus drivers and fishermen and teachers and housewives, but who became part of a resistance network to get rid of the Germans who were occupying their country and to regain their freedom. And they made a considerable contribution to the Allied victory. Many of them lost their lives, but they were willing to do what one has to do, to stand up and speak out and fight for what they believed. And I think that is a lesson that we should heed, not only in this country, but elsewhere too. We face real challenges, more challenges, I think, than any time in my life, certainly. And I think this is a very pivotal time for us in the United States and elsewhere in the world. And we'll just see if we do stand up to those challenges.
Lynn Olson is an American historian, journalist, and the author of several New York Times bestsellers.